It's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking with filmmaker Geralyn Pezanowski about the extraordinary documentary she made called Mine, which airs next Tuesday on PBS, including WEDU right here in Tampa. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Mary Flower with Black Dog Reg here on Talking Animals. Flower with Black Dog Rag, an animal tune of sorts, is wheezing to today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Geralyn Pezanowski, a filmmaker whose documentary, Mine, is a riveting, enormously poignant examination of Hurricane Katrina's impact on animals in New Orleans and their humans, who become separated in the wake of the devastation there. The film tracks the efforts of residents to reunite with their pets, some of whom have been adopted into new homes in the meantime, and the custody battles that can ensue when two families love the same animal. We'll find out more about Mine and the myriad issues it raises when we speak with Geralyn Pezanowski in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Right now, it's time for a couple of animal news items and or announcements, starting with Florida Voices is having its annual Have a Heart Dinner and Silent Auction Sunday, February 28th from 4:30 to 8 p.m. It's going to be at Trang Viet Cuisine in Tampa, and it will also include renowned author and motivational speaker Victoria Moran giving a talk. So there'll be dinner, silent auction, socializing, Victoria Moran's lecture, and all kinds of other good stuff. So you can find out more about that at floridavoicesforanimals.org. And closer to home, much closer to home, right here, in fact, I want to let you know again about, as a WMNF event, we are planning to present the first Talking Animals Festival, which will include live music in the form of several great live, local bands performing animal songs, a major animal adoption component, tables where local animal groups and others can provide outreach, and vendors can sell animal-oriented products or services, various vegan elements, animal art, perhaps a guest speaker or two, food, drink, and fun, and more. And it's free, folks. So mark your calendar. The Talking Animals Festival will be Sunday, April 11th from noon to 5 p.m. at Lowry Park. Not the zoo, mind you, but the adjacent wonderful park where the band shell is. If you'd like to table there or be a vendor or like other information, go to talkinganimals.net and look for the Talking Animals Festival information, where you can also download forms if you do want a table or be a vendor there. You can also email talkinganimals@wmnf.org for more information or volunteering opportunities, sponsoring opportunities, and more. All right, so let's step in now to the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Paul Varghese with part of a piece called Pets on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I love small dogs. I love big dogs, but I hate the big angry dog. You know what I'm talking about? Everybody has that relative or friend, has the dog that always gets mad when you come over. It just tries to attack you. You ever notice, if you freak out and get scared, it's always your fault, never the dogs. Never the dogs. Paul, what's the matter? You don't like dogs? I'm like, I love dogs, but you're just loading a gun. He just threw gang signs with his paw. Because they give you that dog owner logic, all those dog owner lines. He can smell fear. He causes fear. He has claws and fangs. That's his job. He smelt it, he dealt it, you know? That's like being friends with Chef Boyardee. He can smell ravioli. Because he makes ravioli. That's what he does. I had a friend tell me one time, Paul, don't wear dark colors. He'll think you're an intruder. I'm like, this doesn't rub off. You understand that? All right, guys. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate y'all. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
All right, that was Paul Varghese with a snippet of a piece called Pets, taken from a comedy competition performance. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs, including our recent shows with Melanie Joy and Scott Loeb. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. We'd like you to become our fan. And our Twitter page. Follow us, won't you? There's also a place to subscribe to our email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guest program news and more, including info about the Talking Animals Festival. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Geralyn Pezanowski. So let me outline a few things about her. As I mentioned earlier, she's a filmmaker whose documentary, Mine, is a profoundly poignant examination of Hurricane Katrina's impact on animals in New Orleans and their human companions, particularly after they become separated in the wake of the hurricane's devastation. The film tracks the efforts of a select few of those residents to reunite with their pets, some of whom have been adopted into new homes in the meantime, and the custody battles that can ensue when two families love the same animal. Mine won the Audience Award at the most recent South by Southwest Film Festival and will air nationally Tuesday, February 16th. That's this coming Tuesday on the PBS series Independent Lens, including right here on WEDU. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Geralyn Pezanowski to Talking Animals. Are you there, Geralyn?
Here. Hi, Duncan.
How are you? Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
So now this may undermine the hard-hitting journalism that's about to follow, but I'd like to take a moment and sort of gush about your film. That's okay with you.
How about it?
Okay, cool. Well, anyway, I just thought it was fantastic. Really one of the best documentaries I've seen in a while, and just really forceful and poignant and as we'll get into in a moment or two, just sort of an amazing combination of sort of the very specific and, like any sort of great work, sort of very general and universal sort of importance and themes and issues there. So it really stayed with me and my wife, too. And anyway, so congratulations. And now comes the hard-hitting journalism.
Well, thank you so much. It was really an incredible story to be able to tell.
Yeah, well, I've said a few things just by way of introduction and earlier in the show and gearing up to let people know about you joining us today on the show. So I've said a few different things about the film, but it's so brimming with kind of ideas and powerful stories and colorful, compelling characters. I mean, it's just so rich. I'd be very interested to hear how, if you were sort of confined to maybe 24 words, how you would describe Mine.
Wow.
I know. Try.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Mine starts with the animal rescue that happened after Katrina, which was an amazing effort. But I think a lot of really good films were done on that really explore that deeply. And I use that just as a setting off point to talk about the bond that we have with our animals and how important they became after Katrina, not only to the people who were separated from them, but to the people who were there sacrificing their lives and their families, their personal lives, to rescue these animals and who got very attached to them for obvious reasons.
Sure. Well, I was struck by so many aspects of this film, including both its, as I alluded to sort of a moment ago, its precision and its scope. I mean, you seem to somehow have been there and have your camera rolling like around the time Katrina hit, it seems almost, and then you were in New Orleans, obviously, for weeks and months later. But also, apparently, in other parts of the country where the animals central to your story had kind of wound up. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about your approach to making Mine. For example, when did you decide to actually make the film? Was Katrina itself a catalyst, or was there another factor or two that sort of galvanized you into action in the wake of Katrina?
Yeah, Katrina was definitely the catalyst, and I actually went down about 6 weeks after Katrina, so the early footage is a lot of stock footage and footage that was shared by other filmmakers who were down there right away.
Mm-hmm.
But that was definitely the beginning, although, of course, I didn't know what the story was going to be. At that time, I was just really compelled by this amazing rescue effort that was happening and that there was this city where everyone else was being evacuated and these rescuers were going in to a very toxic place against pretty much any logic or rational sense, and they're going in to rescue animals. And so That's what I originally went down to cover.
Sure.
And I created a series of PSAs for the Humane Society of Louisiana, who had lost their facility and lost everything. So that was the original intention. And it wasn't until I got a little more personally involved, because I fostered, and then later, 6 months after Katrina, adopted one of these dogs that had come out of there. And so I think it was really my own personal involvement in the story. Then once I found out that, you know, 6-8 months later, people were still returning, still just beginning to put their lives back together and were wanting their pets back, I think that's when it really became sort of solidified as a documentary.
Okay, cool. I want to follow up a couple of points there that you raised there. I just want to let people know that this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with the filmmaker Geraldine Pezanowski about her documentary Mine, which airs nationally on PBS this coming Tuesday night, the 16th. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so you mentioned that you fostered and then later adopted an animal, which kind of, because one of the questions I had is before you sort of began formulating the plan for Mine, maybe much less shooting it, I was just curious to what extent you were an animal person. Were you an animal fan, an animal lover, an animal advocate? And prior to fostering the dog that you just referred to, what was your kind of connection with the animal world?
Yeah, I'm basically your average animal lover, you
mm-hmm.
know, loved dogs, loved cats, didn't have any pets at the time of going down to New Orleans, but have never done animal advocacy work. I just knew after Katrina that I wanted to go down and do something, and at first it was going to be Red Cross, and that time window passed, and I wasn't able to go down. And then as soon as I saw the images and saw what was happening to the pets, I think I was really pulled in on two levels, both from that part of me seeing these helpless animals stranded in the city, but also realizing at that moment that there were people attached to those animals as well.
Right. Well, let's sort of stick with that then for a second. I think it's safe to say that really kind of an essential source of the film's power and poignance can be traced really directly to the people that you do zero in on to tell their stories, which sort of collectively becomes the story of Mine. I mean, how did you locate and sort of connect with like Malvin and Jesse and Gloria and others?
I really went down to New Orleans. I mean, I think as soon as I realized what was happening, I was taking off 3 days later to continue and start shooting the documentary portion of this. And I had met a lot of rescuers from all over the country, and a lot of them were involved in helping reunite, and a lot of them were on this other side of things, feeling like people shouldn't be reunited with their pets. And so just through those connections I had made in the early days of the rescue, I just started calling everyone I knew and asking them to share stories with me and forward contacts to me, and That's how I met all of those really, really amazing characters.
Right, they really are, and you know, of course, I guess one interpretation is those were sort of the well, at least initially, the aggrieved parties, as it were. So it's, in some ways, it's not hard to understand why they talk with you sort of early and often. But what sort of challenges or other circumstances surrounded landing the multiple interviews? You know, obviously involved with the families elsewhere that had taken custody of these once-displaced animals. I mean, like the Mansfields of Clearwater, which, of course, is not far from where I'm speaking with you at this moment.
Yeah, I think that was a little more challenging, because I think for the people who had adopted pets, they were really afraid of losing them. But I think with people like Tiffany Mansfield, who I think is really an amazing human being, and I'm so appreciative that she shared her story, because I think it's such an important one. I think really the fact that I was approaching it from this perspective of, or having this perspective on both sides of it, having adopted a pet myself and really truly being invested in looking at both sides and giving a thoughtful representation of both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And going in myself, I just knew there were no easy answers. And a lot of it was my own search for answers on what I would do if I were in the situation Tiffany was in.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, another aspect of the film that for me accounted for its magic and force kind of is it really combines an enormously singular circumstance, obviously Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath, with a really kind of powerfully universal one. I mean, the incredible bond with our dogs and cats or whatever animal that animal people, especially animal nuts like us, feel. I mean, we're having, you know, obviously started to foster and then adopt that dog. Still, we're surprised by the strength of that bond as you know, these interviews and sort of relationships with the people at the center of your film grew.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you bring that up because it was amazing. And I think I was constantly surprised, but I think in so many good ways. I mean, to see the humanity that came out in the wake of this hurricane, I mean, people being compelled to act and do good. And I think that's, to me, the heart of this story is that everyone in it, whatever side they fall on in terms of the conflict and the custody battle, everyone started in it for the same reason.
Right.
And that is the love of animals and the bond that we have with them. And so I think, you know, I think I was just constantly touched and moved by the compassion I saw, by the caring, by the, you know, it was just a very moving story all around.
Absolutely. I mean, and again, like you say, I mean, one of the things that's just really nice is that you really present, you know, how tricky that situation is. I mean, you know, these people that have adopted these animals, the Mansfields and others, you know, just thought they were doing a good thing. Hey, a dog needs a home. We have a home. Let's do it. And then, of course, they get connected with them. And then they find out, hey, over in New Orleans, you know, that dog was, you know, somebody else's, and they're, like, missing them. And, they, you know, so then it really gets into some very interesting gray area about, you know, again, the sort of issue of, you know, who, you know, even by doing a good thing, it sort of gets, you know, tricky. But you're obviously not portraying them as villains because they're not. It's just a sort of a complicated situation.
Absolutely, and I think for people like the Mansfields, it was even further, you know, the difficulty and the challenges for them were even further compounded by the fact that they were told going in that there weren't owners on the other end, that
right.
They were abandoned, that they were given up. And so I think going into it, they didn't have the same understanding that people did who were fostering. And so I think there was a lot of misinformation out there. And I think if nothing else, we learn from that, because if this ever happens again, we sort of understand the bigger perspective and how things can go wrong, and we understand that people are going to want their pets back after they're separated. And so, you know, I really hope that, you know, obviously the biggest hope in something like this is that we've really learned from this and that nothing like this could happen again. But hopefully we address the things that allowed it to happen in the first place, which are especially, you know, people not being able to evacuate with their pets.
For sure. Well, again, this is Talking Animals. My guest is filmmaker Geraldine Pezanowski, whose documentary Mine airs nationally on PBS as part of the Independent Lens series this Tuesday night, February 16th. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. A couple things too that sort of connects with for me, Geraldine, is that as the film unfolds and these families are sort of vying, if not in some level feuding, for the same animal, one of the issues that emerges, which is also a central issue to an array of efforts, you know, just more broadly to help and protect animals, is that legally animals once again are considered property. Can maybe we talk a little bit about how that figured into the lives and efforts of the people at the center of your film and you know, how you feel about it, both as the filmmaker here, but as someone who obviously then has adopted a dog and you know, maybe has one on your lap right now.
Yep, at my feet.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think it's really interesting, and the ironic thing is it's that same thing that allowed people to be separated from their pets that ultimately was instrumental in people getting their pets back, because for those cases that did go to court or the law entered in some way, the precedent was set that this was property that belonged to the original owners, the original family. And so in that way, having the pets considered property was actually good for them. But, you know, there's so many things involved, and I think what a lot of the animal advocates would say is, you know, considering them property and having the animals go in that direction without a consideration for what the welfare of the animal is also problematic.
Absolutely. And one thing that just what you said there reminded me that came up like repeatedly in the film was striking even the second or third time I heard it. But a few different times, and I know you obviously sort of included this in the way you did it by design, obviously, but people said Katrina was the best thing that happened to some of these animals. Do you want to sort of comment on that at all? Or?
Yeah, well, you hear that twice in the film, and I think the two times are very, very different. Because the first time it's in reference to a shelter who receives animals who feels like no animals should be returned, that with the amount of, I guess, heartworm and everything else and the fact that animals were left in the city without their guardians, et cetera, that there were a lot of people who felt that way, that no animals should be returned under any circumstances and they're all better off. And the second time that it's echoed is, to me, a little more nuanced in that it's referring to a lot of the animals, the pit bulls, the bait dogs, the animals that were saved from truly a truly terrible existence.
Yeah.
And so I think, one of them's a little more nuanced and a little more situational as opposed to this blanket judgment.
Sure. Well, and... I also wondered as I was watching the film, in the early stages of working on it, were there any stories that involved people becoming separated from their cats and the struggles that ensued with that, or was this always kind of just sort of by nature more about dogs?
Yeah, that's a really good question and one that I get really often. In obviously through the rescue, there's lots of cats being rescued. And it just so happened that really none of the stories we followed ended up in custody battles over cats. We had one woman that we interviewed who had lost her two little dogs and her cat, and she actually had to surrender them when she went into a shelter after Katrina. And so it was an owner surrender, but there was always this idea that she could potentially get them back. And so once she got settled into a home, she started looking for them again. And she actually located her cat and found out that her cat was living in some millionaire mansion in California. And she said, and I asked her why she wasn't trying to get her cat back. And she said, well, I always knew that little princess would do better than me someday. and that was her feeling on it. And she was still trying to get her dogs back. So I really ponder that and try to ask myself why, I'm sure there were custody battles over cats. I just tried to stick to telling the stories that we really knew intimately and that we were really close to and could tell in a really complete way. But it is curious. I've had different people say to me things like, it's not that people aren't as attached to cats. Maybe they just think their cats aren't as attached to them. I mean, I've heard so many explanations.
Sure.
But I do think that there were definitely more custody battles over dogs for whatever reason.
Right. Interesting. Well, we're just sort of nearing the end of our time, Geraldine, but I'm just sort of curious because it just, again, the film just seems so emotional and sort of connected to so many things. I'm just curious beyond, of course, that you've adopted a dog that's at your feet as we speak. I mean, what were some of the most notable ways that making this film, changed you both, while you're in the midst of it and now sometime later as it gears up to air nationally here on PBS on Tuesday?
I really think that, I mean, that moment that I decided to go to New Orleans, and honestly, it didn't feel like a decision. I really definitely feel like I was just being pulled to go there after.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really did change my life. I mean, I'm a filmmaker already. I'm a producer, but this is my first documentary that I've done. And I was just really moved by the impact that individuals had. And I think that's the kind of story that I will continue to seek out. I think it's really important to me that while there is this huge heartbreaking element to the story, there is so much hope and there's so much spirit. And just to see the way people rallied around the pests of the Gulf Coast, rallied around the people, the spirit that people came back with to rebuild their communities, I mean, all of that touched me and moved me, and I'm so honored to to get to see all of that, let alone to get to tell that story and share that story with the country. That, you know, that's the kind of story I think I will always seek out, because as exhausting as the last 4 years have been, it's been so nourishing.
Yeah, I'm sure the rewards are well worth it and then some. And again, it is just so emotional. I mean, boy, I don't mind saying I got teary more than a few times watching the film. But I mean, ultimately, and even along the way, it's still so uplifting in the ways that you just described. I think we're going to try to take one quick call before we might have to end our conversation here. Hi, you're on WMNF on Talking Animals with Jalen Pezanowski.
Hi, good morning. This is Steve from Seminole. How are you?
Good, Steve. How about you? A question for Geraldine?
Very good. Thank you. Well, no, actually, I just thought I'd share a little story because we adopted a cat that was rescued during Katrina in my sailing club. We are we have a small sailing club in Gulfport, and down by the waterfront there, it's a facility that's actually owned by the city of Gulfport. We're in the Bocas Yega Yacht Club, and we got a lot of rodents around there, and so we always keep a club cat around there. And our old cat is going on in age, and we know she's not going to last much longer, so we stepped forward and adopted one of the cats from Katrina. And this is a happy ending story, because the cat, when we first got it, was just terrified of everything, as you might imagine. And it found a counter that it could hide under, and I think for the first 4 or 5, 6 months, no one hardly even saw the cat. It just came out to eat and do its business, and then it vanished. And slowly but surely, it has warmed up and opened up, and it doesn't have a main person in its life, but everybody is very friendly around there. And then I guess the old cat has shown the young one that, hey, this is a pretty good life here, and you got the run of the place and free food, and you get all the attention you ever want. And so now this cat has opened up, and it's friendly, and it readily accepts attention from everyone. And I think it has certainly grown very comfortable in its new home.
Well, that's a great story, and that might be exactly where we need to leave this conversation. Geraldine Pezanowski, thanks so much for joining us at Talking Animals. Again, the movie is Mine, M-I-N-E. The website for it, very cool, is mindthemovie.com. And again, it airs nationally this Tuesday, February 6th, 16th, on PBS's Independent Lens series, including WEDU right here in the Tampa Bay area. Thanks again, Geraldine, for making time to join us on Talking Animals.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to the 2010 Bay Area Renaissance Festival happening each weekend in February and March. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune, it's named that animal tune on Talking Animals. We've just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month. So we'll return Wednesday, March 3rd. I hope you'll join me then. Talking Animals broadcast outreach coordinator and consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. Again, mark your calendar for the first Talking Animals Festival, April 11th at Lowry Park. More information on that at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is new music from Patty Griffin with I Smell a Rat on WMNF Tampa.
I smell a rat, baby. I smell a rat, baby. You better watch out. I smell a rat, baby.